Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch this program by going to GaryNull.com. Today, the latest on health and healing, and also some good takeaway insights into how not to end up with MSG in your body. But you could say, well, I'm conscious, I read labels, no doubt. But they have a way of disguising MSG. So it's in there, you just don't know it. Well, after today, you will know it, and that will help you avoid those products. Commentary today, hopefully, from Professor Paul Atwood, High Noon for the Imperium. Also, Burning Hope from Truth Dig from Robert Shear. And the Department of Homeland Security is watching you everywhere. A new analysis based upon just immediately gotten Freedom of Information Act information that every blogger, every social media person, everyone texting on a telephone, you know what they're looking for? Nope. I'll tell you, it'll surprise you. My guest in the second segment of our program today will be Father Roy Bourgeois. He is a priest from the Maryknoll Order of the Catholic Church, but he's also one of the world's leading activists, founder of the human rights group School of the Americas Watch in Washington, D.C. And we're going to talk about the secret activities that you haven't heard about of the School of the Americas during President Obama's term and attempts on our part to close them down. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Anyone who knows what monosodium glutamate will do to you, well, it depends. Each one of us is affected differently, but you might end up having an adverse smell, taste, tingling sensation. Your eyes get bloodshot. Some people, their tongues swell. They have a hard time swallowing. It can be very serious. In fact, in some people, life-threatening. So you look on a label and you say, I don't see any monosodium glutamate or MSG. Well, then did you look under flavor enhancers? No. Well, they're allowed to do that. And a flavor enhancer is one that it can be then subcategorized under seasonings. Now, here is the other way that you can know whether or not you're getting MSG. And if you can't write all this down, which I'll be going a little quickly, you can always re-listen to the program off the archives. Glutamic acid, hydrolyzed protein. Now, I know a lot of vegans will buy some of the, the sausages that are, because maybe they still like the taste or the smell of a vegan sausage, not a pork sausage. Well, hydrolyzed protein is frequently how they get that taste. Or autolyzed protein, textured protein, yeast extract. That's a common one. People think, well, that's not bad, is it? Yeast extract? Yes, it is, if it's disguising MSG. Also, protein isolate, soy sauce, modified food starch, modifying corn starch, calcium caseinate, sodium caseinate, broth, something as simple as broth, and you'll see that on a lot of vegetable flavoring powders that vegetarians use to put some of that into their vegetable stock. Better make sure it says no MSG. Otherwise, it can have it. Natural flavor, that's correct. You heard me right. If you bought bread or a soup and it had natural flavoring on it and did not state that it didn't have no MSG, then it could have MSG. Also, monopotassium glutamate, gelatin, hydrolyzed vegetable protein, hydrolyzed plant protein, textured protein, yeast nutrient, and Turuluta yeast. Those are the sources that you don't want. Now, for those of you who wonder, well, I didn't know MSG was bad. Well, MSG is the sodium salt of glutamic acid, a naturally occurring non-essential amino acid. And glutamic-rich foods would include wheat, dairy, corn, soy, seafood. And But what do we do when we are allergic to those? Well, the problem is that when one isolates out of a complex food ingredient, a single amino acid, and increases the concentration to unnatural proportions, then there is no check and balance. And glutamic acid can have devastating health effects, not the least of which is the generation of a taste craving. And that's why so many people like soy sauce, which is a very high source of it. It's an excitotoxin. Also, excess glutamic acid will really play havoc with your neurons in your brain, literally vibrating them to death. So repeated excitotoxins results in neuron lesions and a loss of cognitive function. And so other things can cause excitotoxicity. So to reduce the consumption of glutamic acid, as well as its twin excitotoxic non-essential amino acid, aspartic acid, then you've got to, which can lead to multiple seizures, migraines, and multiple sclerosis, just stay away from it, all right? Stay away from it and everything that contributes to it. Next up, let's take a look at something that is very easy to put in your diet, black pepper. A lot of people think black pepper is bad. There's nothing good about it. No, just the opposite. It's all good. Black pepper has a long history of helping in the body. And in fact, that kind of pungent-tasting substance that gives black pepper its characteristic taste is called piperine, or piperine. And the newest research shows that black pepper keeps your fat under check. This was published in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry. So pepper is good, all different types of pepper, so try them all. 1 in 6 cancers is caused by a treatable infection. This is the latest, and let me tell you what they are and why this is something in our control. This was commenting from the Harvard School of Public Medicine in Boston. They talked about, quote, their estimates show the potential for preventative and therapeutic programs in less developed countries. Well, we're not talking about less developed countries. Right here in the United States, people have human papillomavirus. That's one. Helicobacter pylori, which is in people's stomachs, causing ulcers. That's two. Hepatitis B. Hepatitis C, 3 in 4, right? So we're talking about infections that we get regularly, and cervical cancer accounts for around half of infection-related women's cancers, and men more than 80% of infected-related cancers affect your liver, stomach, and colon. So what can we do in a very practical way to prevent these infections which can lead to cancer? It's simple. First and foremost, stay off meat, because meat is a putrefying element that contains viruses and bacteria and stresses the immune system to contend with them when they're in your body going through a morbid process. Next, lots of clean water. The more clean water in your system, the healthier you're going to be. Also, juices like watermelon and lemon juice. That's a good one. Cabbage, raw cabbage, with red pepper juice and lemon. That's an excellent one. Sauerkraut is terrific as well. And then probiotics, 3 or 4 times a day. Easy to do, not expensive, but they can help us. Then vitamin C and quercetin, 2 of the best single nutrients you can take to stop viral replication in the body, especially quercetin. Quercetin's been shown to block viral replication. Curcumin also can be added in there, and Paldiarco. So you see, we can do that. And let's say under the worst-case scenario, we're already walking around with some viruses that can lead to cancer, then get some intravenous vitamin C drips in progressively larger amounts with glutathione and aqua vitamin A. That will knock out the viruses, stimulate the natural antiviral activity in the body, cleanse and fortify the liver, and therefore make you less susceptible to cancers. Also, very important in our diet is fiber. Yet most Americans are not eating enough fiber, even the right kinds of fiber. This latest study shows the following. A lack of fiber puts teens at risk of diabetes. I'll quote this. Amid a table full of trays stacked with tortilla chips at Moe's Southern Grill in Augusta, Shelby proudly holds up a bag of apple slices. The 17-year-old from North Augusta is also the rare teen who thinks about fiber. That's what I eat for breakfast, she says, as she starts eating from the fiber. Not many teens in Augusta are following her example, and it would have serious health consequences, said researchers at Georgia's Preventive Institute at Georgia Health Science University. And what they did, they took a survey of all these teens. They published the results in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Teens are not eating enough fiber. Remember, when you're a teen, you're drinking colas, you're eating soft foods, refined foods, or big cheeseburgers and hamburgers and hot dogs. That doesn't have any fiber. So when you don't have fiber, you're more susceptible to diabetes. Also, they're not exercising, making really susceptible to diabetes. And finally, the Mediterranean diet, which is probably the healthiest diet for most people in the world, quote, Mediterranean diet definitely and definitively linked to quality of life. This is what they're saying from the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. After examining the health of 11,000 university students over a period of 4 years and publishing the results, they say the Mediterranean diet, with a high consumption of fresh fruits and vegetables and pulses, legumes, fish and olive oil, and olives and nuts, that's the ticket. The team of Spanish researchers noted that while the diet has been associated with a reduction in the risk of certain illnesses and increased well-being, their new study shows it also is linked to mental and physical health. Quote, adherence to the Mediterranean diet seems to be a factor importantly associated with a better health-related quality of life. End quote. And that was from the University of La Palma in Granada. Now, everyone in this country eating a healthy vegetarian vegan diet is really following that Mediterranean diet. The more olives you eat, the better. In fact, just before our show today, I pre-recorded Dr. Vandana Shiva in New Delhi, and I'll be visiting in India in the Himalayas for the film on the 12 Tipping Points the next month. And she said, stop by our farm. And I said, what's growing? She said, well, 6,000 different variety of rice. She said that we used to have 200,000 different types of rice just in India, and over 230 different types of mangoes. Who knew there were 230 different types of mangoes or 6,000 different varieties of rice? So there's a lot of good there, and so we need more variety. When you're vegan, you're more likely to be having more legumes and different variety of things because you're interested in how they taste and how to use them in different dishes. If you're eating hot dogs and hamburgers and pizzas, it's the same basic five foods you're bringing into your body, all of them allergenic. You're bringing in dairy, you're in the cheeses, you're bringing in meat of different types. You're also bringing in wheat, which is gluten, cooked at a high level, either as a bun or as a crust, which causes acrylamides, which are known allergens and cancer-causing agents. You're also bringing in sugars, and you're bringing in yeasted products and corn. That's the basis of the American diet, all allergenic, all pro-inflammatory, and unhealthy in the extreme. So when you become a healthy vegan, you open yourself up to a lot of good alternatives. Before we go to our guest, because I haven't had time earlier in the week, I'm going to share some insights with you, with the hope that this extended commentary will provide us with something to think about. Then I will open up our lines for you to share your input in return, what we call our talkback segment of our program. And that number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, after you hear what I have to say. The Great Recession is the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, and like the aftermath of Katrina, or the British Petroleum calamity, or the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, these are all man-made disasters. Many signs point to worse tidings. As you know, I am not optimistic about anything officially changing from any official institution. I don't believe in reforming through the networks of official reformers, because we realize they build loopholes into everything they do, which means that the public thinks something has changed, but fundamentally it's business as usual, except it is never to our advantage. It is always to those who are in power. Many of us who live in this most advanced country are indoctrinated at a very early age to believe our system is by far the most efficient and best ever created, especially if we are affluent and live well. We tend to believe it obeys the laws of evolution towards ever higher forms, more or less as we imagine the human species itself. We go to lengths to ignore the fact that our system began as a brainchild of a minority that imposed its will by brute force upon others who had good reasons to oppose it. It is impossible to separate our Republican form of government from our economic system. As former Secretary of State John Hay put matters as far back as the 19th century, this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, no longer. It is a government of corporations by corporations. Now, mind you, he was saying that in the 1800s. He would fit right in with today's Occupy movement, or those of us who are progressive, who are challenging the power of a corporatocracy to dictate the quality of our lives. It has been the case since the American Revolution, and remains the case, that the American government has been owned and operated by the financial and corporate elites, and the government policies, and most definitively foreign policy, are largely their agendas, set out for their interest alone. Bankers and immense industrial corporations largely run the global economy now, backed by the executive, Congress, and Supreme Court sections of our government. America's gargantuan military-industrial complex, and the connivance of corporate media. This morning, before going on the air, I watched a YouTube video on my Facebook page of a person approaching several people, including at a forum, the publisher and editor-in-chief of the New York Times. And the person simply asked, "What are your feelings about the Bilderberg Group?" They said nothing. "Well, what do you know about it?" They said nothing. And then one of them answered, "I don't know anything about it." One point of fact, they have both attended meetings. And point of fact, almost all the major media titans have attended meetings at the Bilderberg. In fact, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama both attended a meeting at the Marriott Hotel on the same night, and yet not a word was leaked to the press. And yet I have seen the footage of them being there. And who brought this originally to our attention? Who was the only person who had the courage to go out there and challenge them? A person that you haven't heard of in the mainstream media, who was not invited on any of these. Alex Jones did. So here's a man today, not Alex Jones, just a regular person. Everywhere he went, no one would talk about the Bilderbergs. No one. Why not? Why not talk about it? Let them promote themselves. Let them have an open dialogue. But they don't do anything in the open. In fact, nothing is ever done in the open when it comes to those people who are most powerful. As a culture, we deliberately ignore our brutal genesis. This I'm speaking directly to Bill O'Reilly for his constant, insistent idea that we are such an exceptional people that every American who dies in conflict is a hero. What would you say about anyone else who dies in the line of battle for their countries? Would you say the same of anyone else at any other time in history? Would you have said that about the North Koreans dying for their country when they were invaded? No, you would not. In fact, you would not look at any other country or any other person who dies as being heroic when they die. We, everyone's a hero. And yet, Chris Hayes had to walk back a challenge to the idea that not all wars are heroic wars, and hence not all deaths are heroic deaths. And we never take responsibility, nor does Mr. O'Reilly ever allow the world to see the consequences of our naked aggression in other areas of the world and those who suffer. His idea is, if you ever acknowledge there's anything wrong with what we do, you are supporting the enemy. That's odd. That would be like being on a radio station that allows no critical comment ever, a threat of being censored, and yet is open and free comments that allow us to understand our strengths and weaknesses and to rise above them, to change them. And yet in our society, the mainstream media will not broach this subject. The origin of the modern American corporation is to be found in the Plymouth and Virginia companies. Childish mythologies aside, and that's all we have in the media, these were established as profit-making entities, and to make their claim upon the so-called New World, these new enterprises required systematic plunder of lands and resources from natives and their virtual annihilation in the original colonies. They engaged in ethnic cleansing, cheap white labor in the form of indentured servitude, and then ultimately the importation of African slaves. The American system was therefore premised at its outset by murder and de facto aggression and human bondage and the very sins for which we condemn others today. Many of our earlier American heroes were slaveholders and warmongers, but can we talk about this in some balanced, objective way? No, we cannot. Our thoughts is, if you're not on our side, you're our enemy. How immature, how lacking in spiritual connectedness is that? Some of us are old enough to remember when we condemned the communists for their slave societies, which they had, believing that our own slavery was somehow an aberration instead of the absolute prerequisite to establish today's American way of life. Our system's continued success still requires these critical factors. We still have slaves, but now we don't have to see them. They toil on plantations and mines and factories hidden away in far continents, victims of centuries of Western plunder, today camouflaged as globalization. So when Bill Clinton, the darling of the corporate left, and his wife were talking about the importance of NAFTA and GATT and why we had to support the globalization of all nations towards one common goal to liberate the natural resources within every country, did he think about the 2.5 million women every day in Bangladesh that work for about 14 cents an hour and work 18-hour days and are brutalized in that process, who go home silently exhausted at midnight to get a few hours sleep, to prepare their food, to wash their children and husband's clothes, and go back to work so that we can have very cheaply made garments from Bangladesh, 900 million such garments last year, and yet the profits of those corporations were just terrific because they didn't have to pay someone a human wage, let alone a living wage. Why can't we talk about that? Why can't we have a reasonable conversation of what it means to be on the receiving end of someone else's clothes or food or car or sunglasses or building materials? But we don't. All we focus upon is our right to have that, our freedom to have that, and promoting those people who are smart enough to have it all, never questioning the ethics of how they got it. Our system's continued success requires us not to think deeply. And as a result, we employ terms like neocolonialism, but pretend this term does not apply to us. What else was Cuba before Castro but an American colony? What else South Vietnam, South Korea, Dominican Republic, Iran before 1979? The Philippines, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, many others. Why else has the U.S. invaded Iraq and Afghanistan but to try to secure the world's remaining second largest deposits of oil and to acquire oil and natural gas from Central Asia in the very backyards of our rivals, China and Russia? As Edward Said asked, if the principal product of Iraq were broccoli, would the U.S. be in Iraq? Victims of our wars are dismissed under the Orwellian rubric of collateral damage. Do you all remember when the Secretary of State at that time, under Clinton, said on 60 Minutes when being asked by Leslie Stahl, the collateral damage of 500,000 dead Iraqi children, and Madeleine Albright said, yeah, it was worth it. And I thought when I watched that, worth it to whom? You're talking about 500,000 children dead. You're talking about approximately 40 extended family members per family. You just realized that almost half of all the people in Iraq you have adversely affected? How does that build cooperation? How does that build conciliation when you did something intentionally and with malice aforethought that caused the young to die? And yet instead of being condemned and put on trial of crimes against humanity, these people were elevated to the highest levels of acceptability, especially within the corporate liberal and democratic communities. Victims of our wars never are compensated. In fact, if anything, we have to accept that they were part of the fog of war. And while our government now goes to some lengths to ensure that the worst of such crimes are hidden from the public, and if someone should expose them, like a Bradley Manning, attack the person that exposes the crime. Don't attack the person that commits the crime. Look in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia. Daily, we are having pilotless predator wreak a terrible slaughter on civilians. Our Army and Marine Corps do not exist to protect and defend our shores, but to enter other nations and force them to our will. We Americans hide from such uncomfortable facts largely by ignoring them, believing the lies we are told, are by far fantasizing that we are a chosen people. We are on the hand of God, and He smiles upon us. Or we're the redeemers of a benighted world. We have constructed a mass delusion that our way of life represents the most advanced civilization in human existence, despite the fact that its perpetuation has required the deaths, quite literally, of many millions as it took shape. The wholesale violation of the values we claim and the destruction of the very resources and environment that made the American way of life possible in the first place. Any trust in the system is really a kind of fundamentalism. Many want to believe that all this was ordered on high, perhaps encoded in our genes at the very dawn of humanity, its inevitability impressed in the book of time. As in all fundamentalist faith, we have created a set of myths about why we go to war, and these myths center on the falsehood that we do so to protect and defend noble values and principles and our superior way of life, never for the reasons other than waging war, such as to seize others' resources or to prevent others from exercising their right to self-determination, should that impede our interest. In conclusion, in America today, our public culture's enemies have always been presented as aggressors against an intrinsically peace-loving people who take up the sword only because our antagonists have left us no alternative. Thus, it is always the others who bear the pressure for anything the U.S. has done in the name of national defense. Think, say, of the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or the carpet bombing of South Vietnam, or the more recent destruction of Fallujah, where white phosphorus, a chemical banned under international law, and depleted uranium was used on civilians to awful effect, causing a plague of cancers. All of these were brought on by the inequalities of our enemies, so we claim. Yet not a single war in American history was at bottom not been one of choice. And we never go to war, we're told, against any nation capable of wreaking havoc on us. No, we ravage only those who lie helpless before us. The American way of war has been hailed culturally as exceptional and humane and just necessary for the defense of profound human values and ideals, and thus a model for the rest of humanity. God would be thinking well of the way we kill people. The trouble is, truth stands naked in the neo-colonies. This has been especially true since the U.S. assumed ownership of the Western system since 1945 and has used armed violence against many nations, either overtly or covertly, to explain it to the entire world, thereby building new roads, so to speak, all leading to a new Rome. In these almost innumerable wars, interventions, cover-ups, assassinations, since the end of World War II, the U.S. has killed millions in places too numerous to mention now, all, of course, in the name of progress and humanity. And finally, the American empire that most Americans are persuaded does not exist because at an outpost of British imperialism and now occupies a dominant position among the nations of our planet, one of the American goals of World War II was to show that we are supreme. Well, today we are supreme in the ionosphere, the stratosphere, outer space, and every inch of terrestrial land, except for that which is occupied by our supposed enemies, the Russians, the Chinese, and others that would not allow us to have our way. Empire, by definition, is one core nation living at the expense of many others. Clearly, in terms of the distribution of wealth and resources, maldistribution as they are domestically, most roads today lead to the United States. Yet a perfect storm of merging crisis is gathering force that has every possibility to undo the American imperial project, indeed prove catastrophic for human civilizations across the globe. Empire and the American neo-empire today has always relied at bottom on armed forces, and that in turn has always been dependent upon advantages in the technology of war. And that is what we have today. So I ask you, did you know that virtually every phone call that you make, everything that you have in the way of an e-communication is read? It has been examined by whom and why and by what right, what constitutional right, what legal right. While you were asleep, if you are the average American, this president, the last president, and his administrations and other administrations have carefully crafted laws that will justify any pretense to make anyone a protest or a simple request to have a better way of governing, of taking, for example, Citizens United and reversing it, of allowing genetic engineering of foods to be labeled, of a return to understanding the importance of small gardening. All that has been challenged as almost terrorist. Hence, if you were to report on the crimes of animal abuse on a farm, you would be arrested by the FBI under a terrorist provision, not the person mutilating or abusing a farm animal. Today I have, from the Freedom of Information request, bloggers from Sam Rowley that shows an analysis desktop binder. This is Department of Homeland Security has given out what is known as the National Operations Center Information, Electronic Privacy Information Center. Here is what they're looking for, and here's who's looking. The Department of Homeland Security, Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, the Coast Guard, the Customs Border Protection, Border Patrol, Secret Service, National Operations Center, Homeland Defense Immigration Center, the Enforcement ICE Agency, the Task Force of the Central Intelligence Agency, the Fusion Center for Drug Enforcement Agency, the Security Border Initiative, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the Federal Air Marshal Service, the Transportation Security Administration, and the Red Cross and the United Nations. You heard me right. Now, under domestic security, they're looking if you have written or said the word. Listen carefully, because this is what takes it from reviewing what you do to targeting you. If you use the word assassination, attack, domestic security, drill, exercise, cops, law enforcement, authorities, disaster assistance, disaster management, detection, national preparedness, mitigation, prevention, response, recovery, dirty bomb, domestic nuclear detection, emergency management, emergency response, first responder, homeland security, national preparedness, initiative, militia, shooting, shots fired, evacuation, death, hostage, explosive, police, disaster medical assistance team, organized crime, facility, incident, Riot, looting, crash, bomb, lockdown, screening, SWAT, standoff, threat, breach, security, state emergency, national security, gangs. Now, that's just under domestic security. Each one has a group of different words. For example, if you mention words that will suddenly target you under the health concerns, H1N1, outbreak, contamination, exposure, virus, evacuation, bacteria, recall, Ebola, food poisoning, foot and mouth, H1N1, avian, flu, salmonella, smallpox, plague, human to human, human to animal, influenza, CDC, FDA, toxic, agroterror, tuberculosis, listeria, symptoms, mutation, resistant, antiviral, wave, pandemic, infection, water, airborne, sick, swine, and pork, strain, Tamiflu, norovirus, epidemic, vaccine. So in each one of these Southwest border violence, the infrastructure, security, they each have words they're looking for. And if you mention those words, you go from not just them watching everything you're doing, listening to everything you say over the telephone, internet, looking at every text message, you then are ratcheted up in importance. And you didn't know they were doing any of this. And there's not a discussion about this. And there is no effort to stop this. All the while, ask the average American, who won the latest I've Got Talent? That they can tell you. What word will suddenly cause you a lot of problem? That they can't. I'm Gary Nall. That's our commentary. Opportunity for you to offer feedback in a second, our guest. Please stay with us. And specific commentary I will be posting, so you'll have a chance to read it in greater depth if you choose to, and use it in your analysis if you choose to as well. This is from Professor Paul Atwood. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. With us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Before we go to our guest, Father Roy Bourgeois, just a couple things. I have just been told that we have 3 seats available. We're calling people and asking people, if you can't come to the June 15th world premiere of my new hard-hitting documentary, The War on Health, let us know. But we do have a few seats. I'll be there. A panel will be there. We'll premiere my new powerful documentary at the Ethical Culture Center in New York City on Center Park West at 7 o'clock on June 15th. Call, we only have a few seats now, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Now, also, I was called by the Huntington Arts Cinema, and they said, since you're filled up there, could you do a one-day screening over here? So the day after that, on Saturday, June 16th at 1 p.m., I will be allowing a showing out there because there are thousands of people who can't get in to see it, and a lot of them live on Long Island. So at the Huntington Cinema Arts Center on Main Street, at 1 p.m., June 16th, will be the same showing. You can call them directly for ticket information. You can call them at 1-800-838-3006, 1-800-838-3006. Or 631-423-7611, 631-423-7611. And I will be at A Matter of Health in Nanuet, New York, that's up in White Plains, on June the 12th at 7 p.m., where I'll also be showing the film, because people are asking now from around the area if you're all sold out, which we are, except for the few that just seats were available this morning. And those will go in a minute. then I don't have any more time in my schedule for any more showings, but I will go up to Matter of Health, and they're going to screen it there at 7 p.m. on June 12th, which is Tuesday evening. And you can call for information, 845-627-3333, 845-627-3333. I'll give you more information. Right now, my UN lecture is packed. No seats available. If some become empty, I'll let you know. Now my guest is my guest on the line. He is on the line. Let's go over and say hello to Father Roy Bourgeois. I've given your background. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be with you, Gary.
Did you have a chance to hear any of the commentary I was sharing before we came to you?
I did, and I so appreciated your words about, you know, what it means to those on the receiving end.
Well, that,
whether it be the sweatshops or U.S. foreign policy. And I think this is a big issue. I think we're going to be addressing U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. I think I've come to discover, at least in my experience, most of us in the United States simply do not realize what it means to those on the receiving end of whether it be the sweatshops that you mentioned, you know, women mostly working for a dollar or two a day, or what it means to those in places like Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, Colombia, where most of the soldiers are being trained at the School of the Americas. What does our foreign policy mean to these, you know, brothers and sisters in these countries who are on the receiving end? I think our greatest enemy in this country is ignorance. We just don't get it. Many of us don't have a passport. We've never been outside of the United States or outside of our own little state. And we've got a real problem. But hopefully, we can educate ourselves on what our foreign policy is doing.
Well, that's why.
And what it's doing is causing untold suffering and death.
Just a little background for our audience. Father Roy's many protests and accomplishments, too numerous to mention. He won the Gandhi Peace Prize and the Thurman Thomas Merton Award and the Pax Christi USA Pope Paul the Sixth Teacher of Peace Prize Award. And so he's been there. He lived and worked on behalf of the poor in Latin American countries under martial dictatorships. And during that time, he became an outspoken critic of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America and spent over 4 years in U.S. federal prisons for nonviolent protest. And that's why he's challenging this administration for, on the one hand, a president receiving a Nobel Prize for Peace and yet sponsoring secretly the ongoing School of the Americas foreign policy operations. So here's what I'd like for you to do, and I won't interrupt you. We want you to have unlimited time here. Since the time of the School of the Americas was renamed to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, this military training institute that in the past has been associated with the rise and support of dictators, political coups, and Gestapo-like militias and police forces in Latin America, all sanctioned by every single White House administrator and president of Congress, has seemed to drop off the map. We don't hear much about it anymore. The media will never touch it. And this name change seems to serve as a cloaking strategy to make the school's activity less transparent. So I'd like you to begin by hearing you speak about the activities of the School of the America during the Bush years and now into the Obama years. And, for example, I understand now that a third of the members of the Zetas drug cartel in Mexico are former School of the America graduates. And your Freedom of Information Act to get the names of the instructors and graduates of the School of America has yet to be honored. So take us through a history of the atrocities that the United States government, all of our administrations, all of our presidents have actively supported and the media participated in, and then tell us what it has meant to the lives and peace of the average person in the countries where they have worked. The forum is yours.
Let me try and be brief. A little history 101 of the SOA. It began way back in 1946, all legal through a act of Congress. It was a military school that began in Panama, all paid for back then and today with U.S. taxpayer money. In 1983, the school became well known, the School of the Americas, as a school of assassins, a school of coups, a school of dictators, and really was kicked out of Panama and quietly settled at Fort Benning, Georgia, where today it continues to operate. This school is a combat school. It trains soldiers from 15 countries in throughout Latin America in counterinsurgency, combat skills, of course. The big question we had to ask, who are the insurgents? Well, in these countries, they have been who they've always been. They are the poor. They are the landless farmers. They are the union workers, especially in Colombia, where more union labor leaders are killed there than any country in the world. They are healthcare workers, university students, indigenous leaders, spiritual leaders like Bishop Romero of El Salvador. And what we have here is a school that is connected to untold suffering and death throughout Latin America. And we now train, as in the past, about 1,500 soldiers every year. And it's all paid for by our tax money. And we came here actually in 1990. It was just a couple of months after the massacre in El Salvador of six Catholic priests of the Jesuit order and their two women co-workers. And back then we were giving to El Salvador about $1 million a day to the military. And so they sent a congressional task force to investigate. They came back reporting that those responsible for this massacre of the six priests and the two women were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas at Fort Benning. When we arrived on the scene, I must say, Gary, this school was hiding behind a wall of secrecy. We and very few people knew about it. Again, it had been around for a long time. And then we started to do our research, and what we discovered in our backyard was really a school of assassins that was well known in these countries, but here unknown. And we started up the School of the Americas Watch, and we started with a small group of 10 of us here camping out at the main gate at Fort Benning on a 35-day water-only fast. In this group, we had military veterans. I and other Vietnam vets were in our original group, a couple of priests, Kathy Kelly from Chicago. And then we said, let us start gathering at the main gate when we really found out some of the basics of the issue, that those who had killed Bishop Romero, the six Jesuits and the two women, who had raped and killed the church women from the United States and El Salvador, all at the hands of these graduates of the school. That's when our movement way back in the early 90s began to blossom. And our numbers grew as we gathered at the main gate every November that weekend before Thanksgiving to call for the closing of what we saw was a school of assassins, all paid for by our tax money. And, you know, we started again with about 10 of us, and then we had 1,000, and then 5,000, and then 17,000. Our numbers have grown. Our movement is very strong. Those who gather here, I would say over half are college and high school students. We have a lot of nuns, a lot of military veterans. We have senior citizens. Parents come with their children. And it's not complicated. We gather in the name of peace every November here at the main gate of Fort Benning to call for the closing of the School of the Americas, whose name was changed in 2001. I might add that the changes were very cosmetic. It's now called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, but really it's still about men with guns. I live right outside of the main gate of Fort Benning. I'm looking out the window, you know, welcome to Fort Benning. Where are these signs? No trespassing. These barbed wire fences that surround the Fort Benning. They say they're teaching democracy here. Well, having been in the military, as many of us have, we know one thing. We didn't learn democracy in the military. What this school is all about is providing the muscle in these countries where these soldiers are coming from. They protect the economic interests of the United States. As you said in your commentary, they really provide the muscle to exploit the cheap labor and to exploit the vast resources of these countries. And I'm happy to say that our movement is still intact, still strong, vibrant, growing. We're going to be back here in November once again. We're next month, we're going to Ecuador. We have visited over 15 countries now and talked with six presidents, defense ministers.
Well, what we want to do is we want people to know that you exist, Father Roy Bourgeois, and your group. And to visit the website, it is soaw.org, soaw.org. It is a call to action. Also, Bill 3368, that is in the House of Representatives now to suspend operations of the school and to call for investigations in the atrocities. I'd like everyone in this audience to do a positive call to action. Call your House member and say, yes, you support the bill. The bill is in the House of Representatives 3368, 3368, so we can suspend operations at the School of the Americas and get an investigation into its atrocities. Finally, have some, maybe a truth and reconciliation about all the damage done. And this administration, in secret, has been funding it and carrying on its operations without any thought of seeing the injustice they are doing. All the best to you, Father Roy Bourgeois. We are happy to have you with us today, speaking to us from Atlanta, Georgia. All the best.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Knoll. For a final go-to to person today, I didn't get any calls. I would have taken some. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I just want to make a quick comment here. The words you said that are the hot words when people are listening in, I sent you an email. There was a gentleman, a high school kid, Harold Wayne Hadley, was arrested in February of this year for allegedly threatening to blow up his Mississippi school. This is true. But he maintains it was a fart joke. He allegedly wrote on a piece of toilet paper that he passed a bomb in the library. He was held on $20,000 bail. This is a true story. This isn't a joke.
Well, also a true story, they arrested, took out in handcuffs, and jailed a young honor student girl, 16 years old, because she wasn't attending class enough down in Texas. And she was working three jobs to support her family. But going by the law became more important than looking at what it meant to be a honor student, straight-A student, who also had to care for her family. They were treating her as they would any other criminal. This is what's going down in the United States today. This is why I'm opposed to the way our government, our agencies, our bureaucracies are acting, with the complete complicity, complete acceptance of the official Democrat and official Republican parties, their members. I shouldn't even tell them. The cult members is what they are. And I'm sick of it. So those of you who are standing up and speaking out, good for you that you finally are awake to what we really are living in the United States today. We have time for just one of our questions from the audience. And what would that be? And by the way, people can listen to this show anytime over the telephone at 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. What question do you have?
I have a comment from Glenn, a longtime listener. He said he appreciated your comments the other day that if the station is taking money from their listeners, they should make it a priority to send out premiums and shouldn't take their audience for granted.
But Luann, let me just state that based upon the policies of Pacifica and of one of the stations that we are heard on, WBAI, at no time under any circumstances is anyone on the air allowed to mention anything that shines the station in any critical light, whether it's true or not. The station has decided, its management has decided, members of its local station board and national board have decided that no comment, no free speech, no critical examination is to be tolerated, accepted, encouraged, or allowed. Therefore, we must accept that you cannot at any time in the future, no matter how legitimate the criticism may be, or the advice or input, or my response in a positive way, that is forbidden on free speech radio. We are told that speech is not only unacceptable, it will not be tolerated, and I will be thrown off the air the second that anything is said that in any way, no matter how true it may be, shows the station that program director will come screaming into the station as he did recently and demand that the wires be cut on free speech radio. So we accept that. We accept that no criticism whatsoever is allowed anywhere at any time under any circumstances. And I have a letter, and if anyone wishes to challenge me on that, then I suggest I will turn those letters and the tape conversations over so people can hear the truth behind the scenes. But don't give me any more of these comments, because every time anything is said that may be positive, may be constructive, may be helping, healing, conciliatory, growth, awareness, there's no room for it at this station. Are you clear on that?
You know, it's ironic, Gary. On NPR, they read critical mail every day. People that Congress...
NPR allows freedom of speech. It's a
Bill
difference.
Bill O'Reilly, Gary, Bill O'Reilly reads his own hate mail at the end of his show.
That is not the same. We are prevented. I got a letter yesterday. I will mention the person's name. I will read my response to this person, calling her a hypocrite. If that is deemed, I will share information from the management if that is needed, or if they deny any of this. But I'm just telling you now, BAI and Pacifica, on all of its stations, will not tolerate a single word, an utterance, a breath of anything that shows a negative light, even if it is true or even if it's to help the station. So I just want to lay that out so we will not revisit this again.
So in other words, on listener-supported radio, listener input is neither welcomed nor entertained. That's what you're telling me.
And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if that input in any way is considered a disadvantage in showing the station or a person or a host or a producer or management or a station board member in a negative way, if there's anything critical, it will not be tolerated.
Well, that's pathetic.
It may be pathetic. It may be pathetic, but it's what we are. It is the burden that we are given. All right, and if anyone doubts me, I will share the emails from the station board members. I will share the conversations from the station management. I will share the comments from the executive director. I have them all. But I have to accept that. Now, remember, BAI is just a tiny, infinitesimal amount of the people listening. We have a lot of people, and if people want to know that we never censor and we encourage input, they can go to our website where we have vibrant discussions, vibrant interchange, because I believe that only by examining what doesn't work can we go forward and create a better environment that does work. Only when we can sit intelligently and responsibly and share ideas to see how we can grow past our limitations and weaknesses can we become stronger and more effective. I believe that if countries can understand, like South Africa, through truth and reconciliation, and if individuals can understand the significance of an audience and its input, then the audience becomes a part of its future. But if you disdain that audience, if it should in any way be critical, and if you eliminate that capacity to have a voice because you're afraid of what it may do to the listenership that is already almost non-existent, then it becomes a self-fulfilling mission. So that's the rules we have to play by. If we're to be here on the air, then we must play by those rules. So do not ever again bring any comment under any circumstances, no matter how valid, on the air, if it is going to be critical of the station, its management, the foundation, its producers, its hosts, its volunteers, or anyone possibly or remotely associated with it. That's the rules.
A lot of emails, but that's fine. I have many other emails.
Good. Just stick with the emails that are there. They say something that is eliminating the station in the discourse. All right?
Okay.
Isn't it a wonderful world when you can only say something nice about someone and never tell the truth? Man, am I going to send out some copies of Animal Farm in 1984. I'm sorry. That assumes that people would take the time to watch them and learn the lessons. Thank you, Luann.
Okay, Gary.
We have to go now. Coming up next, a person that never shirks from telling the truth and looking adversity in the eye, and that's Danny Schechter, the News Dissector. I'm Gary Knoll. And here at the Progressive Radio Network, we will always encourage freedom of speech and your right to share your thoughts and opinions, because we're not afraid of any truth, even if it may hurt for a moment, if we can learn something from it. Unfortunately, other stations share not our position.